You're listening to Face Off, episode 104, recorded January 17th, 2011. This episode of Face Off is brought to you by AgileTask. AgileTask is a task tracking application featuring an agile workflow, tagging for organization and achievements. AgileTask, your lightweight personal backlog tool. Check it out by going to agiletask.me. And RocketShipIt. RocketShipIt, the complete web-based multi-carrier shipping solution for small businesses and developers. Shipping rates, integrated tracking, and labels for UPS, FedEx, and USPS shippers. RocketShipIt is shipping made easy. Go to rocketshipit.it. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jay Robbins.
And I am your other host, Mark Sanborn.
This podcast, we always talk about things, but we talk about the most important things involving web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can get the show notes for this episode by going to faceoffshow.com. Another week, another episode, another dollar. Mark, how are things going for you?
It's going pretty good, pretty good. Just got back from a nice winter camping session up at a Forest Service cabin.
That's awesome.
Cross-country skied in, lots of snow. It was a great weekend. It couldn't have been better. The weather was just perfect. So it was really good. It's good to get out in the winter.
It could have been better. I don't know if you know, but I wasn't there.
Yeah.
So that would make it amazing.
That's true. That's you're very right about that. I think we need to plan another one. If we can find a one with an available date.
Yeah, totally. We should. It sounds like fun. All right. So let's talk about an item in the news. Not another, I guess another. You going on a winter camping trip isn't really on the front page of Dig or anything like that. But our first news item is that our web app we talked about a little while ago for donating things to charity called Swipe Good. If you don't remember, the concept of it was that it would look at your credit card or debit, It would look at your credit card transaction history, take all of your transactions, round them up to the next dollar, and then that difference would be then donated to a charity of your choice. I believe there are a bunch of different education charities, which is pretty cool. But so there's some good news that Swipe Good now, they have more partners that they sign up with to go look at your, because Swipe Good requires the ability to look at your transactions in some way, right? That's what they want. They need to look at your transactions so they can sort of calculate the roundup and then charge you that amount. But now they just announced that they're launching support for their top requested banks, which includes Bank of America, Chase, and Wells Fargo. Which covers a lot of credit cards, a lot of debit cards out there. So they're expanding, and they're also adding 25 new charities that you can donate to, including like the ASPCA, Food for the Poor, Kids versus Cancer. Lots of cool stuff out there. So that's pretty cool. I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, that's very cool. I remember when we talked about it, one of our criticisms were that there wasn't a lot of charities you could pick from. Or choose from. And now that they add more, that's really cool.
Yeah, they used to be definitely focused on education. Now you can do things like ASPCA or, kids charities for cancer research and stuff like that. So that's really cool. And also more sources means that just more people, have the opportunity to do it, period, which is pretty important.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was some news about Swipe Good. Our next thing that we want to talk about, this is funny. We just spent probably a long time talking about this before we started recording the show. we decided that we're going to do a 30-day challenge.
So, back in the days with shareware, 30 days is kind of a very good spot, to generate a good habit, right. Or to figure if you like something. Mm-hmm. Anything short of 30 days can just be kind of a thing. 30 days, if you do it for 30 days, it can almost become like a habit, a second nature. And so the whole idea with 30-day challenges is to do something for 30 days, to just, say you tried it. It's good. It's like
and
a good effort.
And it makes it a challenge. Like 30 days is, if you're doing something, significant, 30 days is a long time. You really do have to try. It's not like a week. Most people can get through a week of anything, and after that, they're okay. But, 30 days is pretty difficult.
Another thing is if it's something that's just terrible after 30 days, you can quit it. So it kind of makes it, I don't know, it's just a good round number to try something.
I agree. Fun. And we've seen a lot of people doing this, right?
Yeah, Matt Cutts has done it. I used to follow a blogger a long time ago named Steve Pavlina. He does a self-help type blog. And he started doing 30-day challenges with like early rise. His one of his popular posts was early riser, getting up before like 7 a.m. each day.
Yeah.
It's a popular thing because it's fun to do, and it's a good way to try to develop healthy habits.
Yeah,
and things.
It's kind of like a fun life hack. Like, can you do something for 30 days? And especially, you know, if it's something that you think you want to do anyways, you make it a 30-day challenge, you know, and sort of the key to a lot of these are things like self-reporting, like reporting your results, like such as we'll talk about what we'll be doing for that. And then, you know, hopefully the thing is like after 30 days, you know, either have integrated that habit fully into your life or a part of it, or it has helped you. Or like if you found, you know, that it affected you sort of negatively, you can just drop it off altogether.
Yeah. So me, you and I kind of, we kind of discussed this, and we decided one of the things that is kind of unhealthy right now that might be easy for us to change, but still quite a challenge, is to eat breakfast each day.
Yeah,
for some of our listeners, that might sound like not a challenge, I guess, but
I don't.
For the last couple of years, I wake up and for the first 4 hours of my day, I don't have anything in my stomach other than coffee and perhaps a lot of sugar.
Yeah,
from
exactly.
Or something.
Yeah, people love the sort of donut breakfast, and I don't really do that as much just because I don't really like sweet things in the morning as much. But I mean, there's so many benefits to eating breakfast. It looks like, anyways, from, you know, most research and the general thought process. One is it supposedly really helps you with weight loss. It does things like sort of sets up your metabolism for the rest of the day. So if you eat some breakfast, a good healthy breakfast in the morning, your body's kind of like, all right, well, we're ready to go. Let's get going, and keeps your metabolism up, gives you more energy. Energy helps you, you know, burn more of the fat that you have because you're ramped up, you're excited, you don't get crashes.
It helps prevent overeating at dinner time or lunch. And the other thing is, I think there's going to be some side effects. Waking up a little bit earlier might be one. Enjoying the first part of the day might be another. I know I don't really enjoy the day until I'm down on my first cup of coffee. So yeah. I'm hoping that might help jumpstart my day.
So here's the sort of crux. Mark and I want to do a 30-day challenge where we eat a quote unquote healthy breakfast every day for 30 days. And so we kind of sat down and we said, all right, well, what are some things that we can agree on that are sort of a healthy breakfast? That, you know, that is enticing. We don't want to do like a healthy breakfast, like, oh, you know, one of our acceptable items for breakfast would be oatmeal. And the truth is, I don't like oatmeal a whole lot. I could probably eat it maybe once a week for breakfast, and it'll probably be nice to break up monotony. But if I did a 30 days of eating oatmeal for breakfast, that would be miserable. So some of the things that we had agreed on, like eggs. So, you know, eggs, one of those weird things that got a bad rap for a long time. But it's a really good protein boost in the morning, and they're really not that terrible for you.
Any vegetables are going to be acceptable in this breakfast. Any fruit, whole grain cereal or oatmeal, like you had said, mm-hmm. Whole grain toast.
And I mean, really,
if we could think of anything else, I mean, as long as the main course is one of those things, it's probably going to be acceptable. We just want to stay away from a giant donut or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, like the Captain Crunch breakfast. Like, I ate breakfast, and you're like, oh, well, you just had, you know, 40 grams of sugar. So, you know, that's kind of what we're trying to prevent. Also, you know, I'll admit something, that I work on campus, and they actually sell breakfast on campus in the morning. And one of my favorite breakfasts that they have is like this dish that is hash browns with scrambled eggs on top with like cream gravy and then like bacon or sausage and then cheese sprinkled on top. And, like, that is not a very healthy breakfast.
Yeah.
So we kind of agreed on these things, you know, eggs, like, so you can have scrambled eggs, an omelet, a poached egg, you know, put it on whole grain toast. I'm like a buttered toast guy, but I'll try not to overdo it. You know, any vegetable, fruit, of course, whole grain cereal, like Cheerios. We both love oatmeal squares, Wheaties, shredded wheat. I love shredded wheat. Actually, I'm not sure if shredded wheat is whole grain. I know it's like literally shredded wheat, but I don't know if you could consider that whole grain or not, but. And oatmeal is a good one.
Not sure.
So, So, you know, our focus, there's supposedly so many benefits, and I'm with you on that, Mark. You know, one of our other focuses, too, is to make it easy as possible. You and I both were talking about, I have a Keurig K-Cup coffee maker, and if I run out of the pre-made K-Cups, I have, like, the little filter thing you can do to make your own. But even that much of a sort of, like, leap right now for my morning routine is too much. So we're hoping to try and, you know, if we make it a challenge that we have to eat breakfast every day, then we're going to have to get up a little bit earlier to make sure we cook and eat breakfast, because you can't, you know, you don't want to just rush it and shove it down. And then hopefully with that, you know, I'll be able to get up and make a cup of coffee and really wake up before I, you know, walk to the bus and stuff. And then through it, hopefully we'll get a good, healthy morning eating habit with a good morning routine, because I really want it. And so I'm glad that you mentioned that you were going to, because actually Mark had mentioned that he was going to try and do it himself. And I said, dude, I've been trying to do this myself for a while. Let's totally make it a challenge. And I'm excited to do it. And we'll be reporting our results here on the show. So if we fail, you have total unrestricted access to make fun of us and call us losers and all that fun stuff that will motivate us to do what we need to in the morning. So I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, me too. And I'm really excited to see the end, the 30 days, and report on how great it was or how miserable it was.
Yeah, so, exactly.
But either way, I'm going to stick to it to the end.
Me too. So,
and if I don't, you know, let us know, like ridicule us or something.
Absolutely. So the key to this, though, is, you know, like we said, some easy way to make a good, healthy breakfast in the morning. One of those, of course, is oatmeal. That's pretty quick and easy. But like I said, I'm not a huge oatmeal guy. One thing I do love is I love a good poached egg. And so with our Geek Tool theme of cooking, this is kind of a shortcut detour. This is probably not the best way to learn to cook. But in the spirit of our challenge, our Geek Tools of the Week are ways to poach an egg. I love poached eggs. They're, you know, pretty healthy for you because you're not frying them in oil. Poached egg is cooked with water, usually either in a pan through like steam, kind of double boiling, or the sort of traditional way to make it is to actually put it in really hot water and cook it in there. So, to do a poached egg in a pan by yourself takes a lot of practice. I've been practicing now for like a year and I still screw it up once in a while, and it takes time. And like you and I are talking about, the best way to ease into this is to make it as quick and easy as possible for us to get a good breakfast, because that will increase our chances of not failing. So our first geek tool is a microwave egg poacher from Amazon. This thing, what is it? It's only $5.82. It has a capacity for 2 eggs. So like my favorite sort of good breakfast is 2 poached eggs on 2 pieces of buttered toast, which, you know, is not that bad, but it's also not, you know, Captain Crunch or a donut, but it's, you know, not the best. But I love poached eggs, so this 2-cavity egg poacher will be perfect for me to crack a couple eggs. Of course, before anyone screams, you know, foul because you're going to be microwaving a plastic and stuff, I looked up the company that does this. They claim their products are BPA-free. And in general, I don't plan on making this a habit to microwave it forever, but just for the 30-day challenge, I think being able to microwave a couple poached eggs will be pretty beneficial, don't you think?
Yeah, I plan on doing it either in plastic or glass, whatever I have. And I've actually never microwaved an egg, but I'm planning on doing it this challenge because I just know myself, and doing this in the morning is going to be tough.
Absolutely. So our next geek tool, we actually have a couple of them this week to help Mark and I out with our challenge, is a microwave omelet pan. So I've seen these before. I used to have one. I never actually used it. That's the sad part. There, again, it's really cheap, $6.69. It's a little pan where you can put in on each side, you know, put in some scrambled eggs, and then if you want some vegetables, and then maybe a little cheese. And then what it does is it gives you 2 perfect little sort of omelet sized things, so you can, after they're cooked, you just flip one side over onto the other and you have a perfect little microwave omelet. I think an omelet might be a good way to go about this if you got serious, because you can put things like vegetables in it as well and have an even more sort of robust breakfast.
Yeah. The other one is the skillet egg poacher. I assume you can put this in just a normal skillet with a little bit of water.
That's the whole point. Yeah, it's a 10-12-inch skillet. You put a little water in the bottom, and you put the pan in the top, and this, you know, creates these nice little poached eggs for you. So if you don't want to do it in the microwave with plastic, this is nonstick. I believe nonstick metal. I think so, yeah. So this one, you know, if you don't want to do the microwave on plastic, this is nonstick. So, you know, because one of the hard parts if you cook anything with eggs, if you're trying to not use fat like oil or butter or something to cook them in, is that they'll stick to the pan if you don't use like a nonstick pan or something like that. And the last one I want to talk about, just because it looked goofy and interesting is all get up, is the Back to Basics Egg and Muffin, two slice toaster and egg poacher. So for the perfect breakfast, you can have this little toaster toast two pieces of delicious whole grain toast, as well as cook a poached egg for you all in one appliance.
It looks ridiculous. The price for a toaster, it seems pretty reasonable for what it, I mean, what it does. And you know what's funny is there's 769 reviews and it's got over 4 stars.
Yeah. So it works and people like it.
People actually, as ridiculous as it looks and sounds, it gets great reviews.
Yeah.
And
so maybe something to think about when we, if we get further along in our challenge, huh? Or if we continue to have these good habits, maybe eventually we'll say, let's get out of the microwave. Let's get this little toaster with a little nonstick, you know, cooker. And then you have breakfast in one push of a button. Thank you, modern technology, saving us. Again, so check out those geek tools. Let us know what you think about them. And let us know what you think about the challenge. Maybe if anyone else wants to try and partake in it with us, you know, we can all work together to try and get a healthy breakfast habit. Because I know I need it. All right, let's move on to... Did you have something to say, Mark? I'm sorry.
Nope, I was just going to say we got some great web apps here.
Yeah,
The first one that you found was what?
It's called TV Tropes. This was given to me by my coworker, Matt. He linked to it all the time, and after a while I was like, gosh, this is kind of a funny website. I should probably talk about it on the show. The old page kind of tells you, like, what is a trope, right? It sounds like I didn't know what this was at first. And tropes are devices and conventions that a writer can reasonably rely on as being present in the audience members' minds and expectations. So, I mean, but it says specifically they're kind of like cliches, but they say specifically they're not cliche. The word cliche means stereotyped and trite. In other words, dull and uninteresting. They're not looking for dull and uninteresting. They're looking for recognized tropes that people use in – it started out with TV. That's why the site is called TV Tropes. But really, in the end, it's, they extend it to everything, comic books, movies, I mean, all kinds of stuff. It's sort of ridiculous what they have now. But the funny part about it is when you start looking at these, you start recognizing these that, you know, but you never really, you know, picked out, let me see here. What are some good ones? So here's a favorite. It's called Van in Black, and it basically the trope is you've seen it a million times, that large, menacing black van pulling over to the other side of the street the moment you go inside. Or maybe you have dismissed it as a paranoid speculation, just as the man wanted you to, but you should at least know what it means. They are watching you at this very moment from that very car. And you know, this is a classic trope that is everywhere. There are so many examples of it in, you know, anime, manga, comic books, film, literature, live action TV, video games. These are all the categories they have here. Web comics, web originals, Western animation, real life. They had so many categories. In a scene in Ocean's 11 involved a team attempting to purchase a van in black, hilarity ensues. You know, it's just great. Played for laughs in Old School, when the protagonist uses one of these to kidnap their fraternity pledges, completed with Metallica soundtrack. I mean, there's so many examples of these great tropes. They're things that you just don't necessarily, they're not obvious, but they're just part of these storytelling elements and tools that you know.
Yeah, totally. They also have like a search, so you can search through them.
Yeah, there's like a random.
They've got a ninja trope.
Here's another one, the vulnerable convoy. You know, in a TV or movie show with police in them, and anytime a convoy transporting a prisoner or more is shown, it will almost always be attacked. Sometimes the convoy may even be sent out for exactly this reason.
The slippery skid trope, where something like slick oil or slippery jar of marbles are poured on the floor and the targeted character vehicle slips, skids, falls, crashes, typically backwards.
Yeah.
Seen often in broad physical comedy, you know, like you think of Home Alone and stuff.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, I mean, this site is, it started out as a wiki for just TV tropes, you know, for tropes just in television. It's expanded to a ton now. It's a huge collection of awesome stuff, and you'll totally get sucked in. I mean, you'll start looking at random ones, links, you know, ones that link to other ones, and all of a sudden it's, you know, 5 hours later and it's 2 in the morning and you should go to bed.
I think I like slippery skid movies. The Goonies, Jumanji, Home Alone, Hook, Three Ninjas, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Oh,
these are like all solid shows right there.
And that's why we don't watch movies when Mark comes over. All right, moving on to our next web app. We've been talking about our sort of series of geek tools and stuff, talking about learning to cook, you know, beginner cooking and how to learn it and stuff. One of the things that helped me so much is sort of with my culinary knowledge is to subscribe to food blogs. There's a couple of them called like Serious Eats, The Kitchen, The Bitten Blog, all really good food blogs that just, I mean, even if it isn't something that directly pertains to what you're going to do, looking at recipes gives you ideas. I mean, what we made tonight was I made some barbecued steak that we sliced really thin and then sort of wrapped into lettuce with some sort of Asian sauce that I made up. Was totally an idea I got off of a blog that I kind of just mishmashed into my own recipe. Foodpress.com is sort of a collection of the different food blogs that are being served off WordPress.com. WordPress.com is like one of the biggest and best sort of blog networks out there. I love it. And so this is like a good place to go and find, you know, featured food bloggers, just food photos. They have kind of just a best of on the front page where you can see what's happening that day, new posts involving food. And what's cool about the food blogs is a lot of them, they review like, you know, restaurants around your restaurants. They sometimes give you recipes, and sometimes a lot of times they just give you tips and tricks for you know, how to cook and stuff. Depending on which one you're reading, they are so useful and so awesome, and it's a great way to sort of getting to the food ecosystem, the food sphere. And a website like foodpress.com is a great way to find those cool blog posts and cool bloggers that are blogging about food.
Cool. I just found an awesome recipe for breakfast that I might have to try.
Well, you're going to have to share it with me now, because guess what? Oh, pizza for breakfast? Is that what you're looking at?
No, it's the Elvis French toast. It's got like this French toast with peanut butter in the middle and bananas.
Oh.
I don't know. That's borderline.
Like, you know, odd story time. We talk about our cats a lot on the show, which kind of makes us sound like lonely elderly folks. But my cat loves bananas. Whenever my wife eats bananas, he's like, hey, and she'll give him a little chunk and he'll mow it down. He loves bananas.
Well, my cat loves to open cupboards and drawers. he can open any cupboard or drawer in the house. It's crazy.
Oh, man. Good work, Bert.
He often does.
Hey, if you guys listening to the show have some news, a follow-up geek tool or web app or topic you think we should talk about, let us know. Go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. You can tweet us out. We are at faceoffshow on Twitter. We have a Facebook fan page. We have an email, studio@faceoffshow.com. Let us know. We'd love to hear from you guys, because we have a couple topics in the works that, you know, are will be sort of different than we usually do. We usually tend to cover an idea and talk about it, but this time we're going to kind of set, or not this time, but our next show, we're kind of setting agendas like, hey, we're going to talk about ways to do this. And so we want to hear from you guys. Any prompt, anything, let us know. Go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. We would love to hear from you guys. Let's get on to our topic, which is a continuation of last week. We talked about software design philosophies. We talked about some or software development philosophies. My goodness, someday I'll learn. It's a lot of big words there, and I'm having a hard time with them. And last time we talked about sort of agile development, kind of what agile means. I believe we talked about waterfall, sort of the waterfall process, and what makes agile different. And this time we're going to get into sort of some specific. I mean, agile is an overall philosophy. Waterfall is an overall philosophy. We're going to get into some specific sort of agile, what would you call them? Like processes, right?
Yeah. So these are going to be exact roadmaps on what you need to do if you want to kind of be agile versus waterfall. And some other, there's another one we're going to talk about. So let's just get right into it. We've got extreme programming. You guys may have heard about this. It's got some pretty strict rules, or maybe not strict, but it has a very good path. It's like you should do these things. Mm-hmm. It's very simple and very, you know, it's laid out for you. So the first thing is planning. And this is where you usually do user stories. And a user story is like, you know, have the user describe what they would like to do.
Mm-hmm.
As simple as that.
There's also some specific sort of user story, what would you call them? Like user story ways to go about
guidelines?
It too. Yeah, guidelines or methods as well. Like there's one that we used to talk about at work once in a while that was like, as a general user, in order to update my profile, there must be a profile editing page.
Another common piece of advice, I guess, is to ask the user what is the minimum thing that they would accept. If there was a feature that they wanted, and they were talking about their feature, what would be the minimum thing that they would accept mm-hmm. as that feature to start with? And then the other part of planning is the project is divided into iterations. Oftentimes it's 4 weeks, 2 weeks, a month, mm-hmm. whatever, the project. It depends on the project and what you're making. Managing, typically in extreme programming, they encourage open workspace so you can kind of travel around, see what people are doing. They have a daily stand-up meeting to get everybody on the same page. And I think you do stand-up meetings, right? Am I correct on that?
Yeah. Well, we play around with a lot of these different things, so we don't really have a set way to do about it. But one thing we've been trying lately is stand-up meetings, because we found, the meetings are always one of those things, and this is why they do stand-up meetings, is they always start like, oh, we'll just meet for 10 minutes. We'll sit down and meet for 10 minutes. And if you sit down, it's never 10 minutes. You always find something. But if everybody is standing up, you'd be surprised how quick people are to like get out. It just has a different sense of urgency to it. You're standing around, you're not sitting down, you're not comfortable. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, well, let's go. We got to go. We got to get this done so we can move on, And so that's why they really encourage stand-up meetings. And we actually did that we're moving to that for a couple of ours where we started them as like, oh, let's just make them small meetings. And sort of over the months, they've just gone to these giant 2-hour monoliths where, we're really off focus. And so one of our suggestions was, let's try and just do a stand-up meeting for this one. So, one meeting a week we have is kind of a big long one where we talk about what we did and discuss stuff. But, our beginning of the week meeting where it's like, what are you going to do this week? Let's just make it a stand-up. Eric can be quick about it and get it done.
Yeah, I think everybody's been there in the meeting hell, which is like a 2-hour and it's going nowhere and nothing's getting done.
Yeah,
exactly. So might want to try that. Designing is the next stage. We talked about simplicity. What is, the minimum thing we can do to complete this feature to get started? Refactor whenever and wherever possible. Often in like Waterfall, you have very formal design specifications and you kind of stick to them and you don't really refactor as often. Agile is always about as soon as you get done, you have some free time, refactor. If code's starting to look ugly or messy, stop what you're doing and refactor. Mm-hmm. Speaking of coding, they often talk about using TDD or test first mm-hmm. programming.
Totally.
TDD stands for test driven development. We've talked about that before, which is you write your unit tests and then you try to make the code that passes it. They have a few guidelines and rules to that. One is write the least amount of code, kind of the same design philosophy they have. Write the least amount that gets the test to pass and then mm-hmm. write more tests.
Yep.
Code is pair programmed. Pair programming we've talked about as well is where you get two people and one keyboard and you guys both kind of think mm-hmm. and type and create the code. There's a lot of advantages to this. The code is shared, so kind of everybody knows how things work. It's a good way to bring new people to the project. They can pair up with another programmer and they can get up to speed on the project. Mm-hmm. Responsibility is shared with the code, so no one's like, "Oh, you're the the tag guy," like an agile task. The tag guy. You're the video coder guy, or you're the compression guy, or you're the encryption guy, or whatever.
Yeah, it definitely shared code and ownership is a big deal there.
Another thing is integrate often. We've talked about this a little bit in some of our trending technology podcasts. Continuous integration, instead of building the code and then test it thoroughly and then try to integrate it all in one day, some of the philosophy is like just constantly be evolving. Don't make like huge version changes. testing, all code must have unit tests. All code must pass all the tests before being released. When a bug is found, our tests are created. So if a customer or somebody finds something, they say, you know, this isn't working, instead of just filing a bug right away, maybe file the bug, but write the test that proves that that is an actual bug.
Right.
And then you have something where you can take that test and you actually can write code to make that right. test pass.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've heard oftentimes where I work that a bug is just a test that hasn't been written yet. So, yeah. I mean, you know, because hopefully
good way
you
to
test,
look at it.
You're doing test driven development, but first beforehand, you're trying to think of everything that might make this code break. And so if you find a bug, that's just a test that hasn't been written yet.
Some of the criticism with the extreme programming is software design is a problem where requirements, limitations cannot entirely be known before completion.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, this is your criticism where is if, let's say you're in a big company, your team uses Agile, uses extreme programming, but the overall big daddy project is, you know, being done in a traditional waterfall fashion with, like, a lot of engineering and, you know, construction projects are, and they work for that. So let's say, you know, your software is part of this big project. It would be hard because the rest of it is, you know, sort of planned out in this way, and it's kind of hard to integrate that into it, especially, you know, just because it's different. So Waterfall and Agile have a hard time really working together. And this is one of them where it, you know, it is pretty hard to, especially it's pretty different. So, I mean, instead of, you know, it's almost a direct reaction to Waterfall. Instead of doing planning, managing, designing, coding, testing all at once, you're having, you know, multiple small cycles with that cycle in it, you know, planning, you know, coding, testing, you know, refactoring. Planning, coding, testing, refactoring, planning, coding, you know, instead of just one big planning phase, one big coding phase, you know, and that's pretty different.
Mm. Another one I want to talk about. So that's extreme programming. It's got some rules, I guess, to follow.
It's very extreme. It's crazy programming. It reminds me of, like, you know, like the used car commercials. Like, I'm Jade. I'm doing extreme programming down here at Jade Software. So come on down, because you're not going to find the most extreme programming ever.
That's funny.
It's just, you know, it's a title that is almost misleading because it sounds so hardcore. But really, you know, I think, you know, we find with most people doing extreme programming is it's pretty fun and awesome. You don't like walk into an extreme programming shop and they're just like, yeah, coding, which is kind of how it sounds, you know.
So the next one is called Kanban. And, you know, I've heard a lot of the word Kanban being passed around on the internet these days, but it's if you start doing some research, it's kind of hard to find like rules laid out as you see it with extreme programming, like do this, do this, do this, mm-hmm. do this. And I realized it was because Kanban really just has very, very simple, it's more of a very simple set of philosophies, not really do this, do this, do this.
Right.
Kanban was started by Toyota in the whole just-in-time production
interesting
methodologies in manufacturing. So it's been around 50 years. It's been proven successful in manufacturing and other things. Software, I'm not sure if it's been, you know, if it's not really been around right. in software for 50 years, but it's becoming really popular now. So their whole philosophy is to keep flow without iterations. But if you kind of look at it closely, it's just iterations. It's just really, they're not like at a set time.
Right. Right.
But you could set, I got more in depth, and they mentioned you can set actual iterations if you require them, but they don't say like you need to have it every single 4 weeks. It's more of a, they think of it more of as a flow. This one feature is done, and then another one's coming in, and another one's done, and another one's coming in.
Huh.
It's often seen, and we'll talk a little bit more about that flow. It's often seen as a simpler version of Scrum, which we're going to talk about a little bit later, which is kind of, It's an agile methodology like extreme programming that has some rules like doing daily stand-up meetings, mm-hmm. having iterations that are at a constant level, like we release every 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. So one of the rules in Kanban is to make work visible. This literally means you go out and you get a board, or you create a board and you put it on your wall, and you have like sticky notes that mm-hmm. show where work is in its life cycle.
Yeah. Our friend Rob was saying that. He was like, man, he's like, well, at first when I was looking at Kanban, all I could find was like pictures of sticky notes on whiteboards.
So I kind of relate to this. I mean, you know, you have a bug tracker and stuff, but like if you're not looking, if you don't log into your bug tracker every day, you kind of just forget about it. If it's out of sight, it's out of mind. And, you know, when you start when you start working on your projects and stuff, you go into your bug tracker and you grab stuff and work on it and things. Mm-hmm. But part of it too is certain features are in certain stages. Like the first stage might be getting user stories together. And another stage might be coding, and then maybe testing, and then maybe integration, and then maybe going live.
Totally.
And all this kind of works together. So making it visible. So they suggest making a board. But the other thing is, so limit work in progress. Mm-hmm. And this is where the board kind of comes in. They literally have a column on one side with sticky notes going, and they have a limit of how many sticky notes that can be in that
awesome.
Column.
That's awesome.
So that's your queue. So you can only have four, and you can make arbitrary numbers. They don't say you have to have only four things in your queue at a time, whatever. It all depends on your project and your team. Mm-hmm. But you limit how many things can be in your queue. As soon as you move that sticky note out of that queue and into, let's say, the acceptance tests, like writing and figuring out what it is we want to actually do for this feature. Mm-hmm. Another sticky note can, as soon as that one's moved to the next column, you can then add one more, you know, feature to your queue. You can awesome. Actually start working on stuff. Huh. So the focus is to get that sticky note from one side of the board to the other side. So from conception to finished, polished, done feature. And it has to provide value to the customer. It can't be, I mean, if a bug is fixed, that's obviously value, but I can't think of an example right now, but there's times where you
like,
often
I just
want
a styling change. Right. Like you can't just say like styling change, you know, if that's not what's important to the customer, if they just mention, you know, offhand they want a style change, but really there's a bug that prevents people from saving a record. It's like, you probably need to do that one first.
So there's some advantages of this, you know, limiting the work in progress. It focuses on getting stuff done to completion. Not like I have a problem personally. One of my weaknesses is I love to start things. I love to start projects and like learn new things, but I hate getting it finished and done. I don't know what it is, but I call it like the 80%. I can get things 80% done.
I'm the same way, dude. I know how 80%. You feel. Absolutely. It's tough.
So here's the other thing with visualizing the work and having this sticky note system. You can see blockages. You can literally see, man, that sticky note's been up there for a while, and I'd love to work on some other things, but that one's in the way. I got to get it out of here. So you have to finish that one.
That's great.
It also means that to get more important things done, you got to finish those other ones. And they do some boards that I saw had like an expedite row. And if somebody puts a sticky note in that expedite row, you can't work on any of the other sticky notes until that one's done.
Oh, my.
So they did have like a way, like if some crazy emergency thing came along and interrupts your thing, you could do that. One of the other advantages was if they're noticing that one sticky note is not really moving, other people on the team can kind of jump in and say, let's clear this out, because we would really like to work on some, you know, more important features. So let's all get together and help this one sticky note get through.
Mm-hmm. Pretty cool.
Some funny slogans: slow down to speed up, stop starting and start finishing.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are, those are pretty helpful. Kanban, one thing our buddy Rob, when he was looking at Kanban stuff, was sort of noticing that Agile Task, our task thing, that, you know, our Agile thing is pretty generic. It follows, we kind of focus on just the generic Agile philosophies, not a specific one. And he was looking at Kanban, saying like, oh, you know, our tool fits in with that workflow, which is pretty good.
Yeah, so I guess that was the most important thing I wanted to hit on that I kind of almost forgot, was you can use Kanban with any of the other Agile and even Waterfall. You can do Agile, Extreme Programming, Scrum, or Waterfall and still do the Kanban thing. Because it's really just make work visible, make it so you can actually see what you need to do, and then limit the things you're actually working on at one time.
Right.
And it seems like the internet's kind of, in the software world, has adapted this board, you know, a sticky note system, but it doesn't have to be a sticky note system.
It could be like an e-tool or something like that. All right. Well, that, Mark, I'm going to wrap that up for this week. We still have to talk about, and we're going to talk about these next week. We're going to talk about Scrum, which is another popular one. And then we're going to talk about one that isn't sort of really agile at all, called the Code Cowboy. I think we all know and have heard of this. And we're going to come up with some, you know, maybe some tips to try and help you not be a bad code cowboy. If you are going to be one and have no other choice. So make sure you tune in next week. We'll continue this awesome discussion on software development philosophies. Pretty cool stuff. I want to remind you that you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe if you haven't done so already. Also, leave us some feedback. Let us know what you think, or if you have ideas for any part of the show, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Love to hear from you guys listening to the show. Thank you for, I want to thank specifically my buddy Tig, who has been commenting on our episodes. You can tell he kind of got busy and wasn't able to listen to the show, and he's been catching up, because in like one day he'll comment on episode 93 and then episode 94 and then episode 95. So
nice.
Even old episodes have value. I think Tig will admit to that. So please do let us know. Thanks for listening so much. We really appreciate it. All of you out there listening, you guys are awesome, and we appreciate every single one of you. We'll see you guys next week.